It's March 2023. The first three quarters of 2022 was a difficult time to buy property in the post-COVID boom. We'd started this podcast in the February, and for the first 8 months of the year, we hadn't added to our portfolio of five student HMOs. In the September, we bought a block of four one-bed flats pre-auction for £230,000 in cash, and after spending close to £100,000 refurbishing the flats, we'd applied for a mortgage. We'd hoped for a valuation of £440,000 in our wildest dreams and £330,000 as a worst-case scenario, i.e. the purchase price plus refurb costs. When the valuation report came back, we were gutted. The flats had been valued at £295,000. That was on March the 1st. It's now March the 6th, and my mortgage broker has come back to me with more bad news. There's a problem with my credit rating. How do you keep on top of your UK credit score? Do you even know what your credit rating is? Do you know which factors affect your score? This episode serves as a warning as to what can go wrong if you're not very careful, even if you're the kind of person like me that prefers to pay their credit card debt at the end of each and every month. So if you're an expat or even a UK-based investor, but especially if you're an expat, stick around till the end of this episode for tips and tricks and information on how to keep on the right side of the credit reference agencies. You're listening to Expat Property Story, a podcast in which I share my story to smooth the way for you to have your own
expat property story.
Hello there. This is episode 151, the second of a little mini season of shows explaining why we didn't buy any property in 2023. But before we continue the story we started last week, I'd just like to point you in the direction of our new LinkedIn page. So if you'd like to get in touch and connect with us there, just search for Expat Property Story. And if you'd like to follow us on Instagram, the handle is expat_property_story. And finally, to join our WhatsApp group chat, just get in touch via the link in the show notes and you can reach out to other expats to ask questions. We pride ourselves on this being a safe space where no one will be trying to sell their services. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, then it would be great if you get in touch, because none of us is as experienced and knowledgeable as all of us. Now, back to March the 6th, 2023. My mortgage broker has received a message from the lender saying that my credit file is showing arrears for 1 month and that payments must be up to date for the application to proceed. I have no idea what this relates to, and Experian, the credit reporting agency, doesn't seem to like Hong Kong browsers, so I'm none the wiser. My broker checks from his end. He tells me it relates to my Halifax credit card. So I quickly log on to the Halifax and search back through the online messages and notifications and eventually find the cause of the problem. Because of COVID travel restrictions and the nature of my expat job, I hadn't been back to the UK from the summer of 2019 until the November of 2022. And the only time I use my Halifax credit card is when we're in the UK. It turns out that in July 2022, the Halifax had written to me saying that the direct debit set up to pay off the balance at the end of each month had been cancelled because the card had been inactive for 13 months. Now, I don't know for sure exactly what happened, but I have a vague recollection of calling the bank at the time. But either way, the direct debit remained cancelled and soon drifted out of my consciousness, so that by the November of 2022, I was completely unaware of any issues to do with the card. Now, for the full tragicomic version of this story, you can and should go back to episode 84. But the short version is that I went back to the UK to say goodbye to my mum, who was dying. And after a 14-hour flight, taken after a full day at the expat office, I'd arrived jet-lagged and confused at Heathrow and taken the wrong suitcase, which I later had to return to its rightful owner. The courier company who came to collect and return the suitcase would not accept my Hong Kong credit cards for one reason or another. My sister offered to pay with her card, but I had one more card to try, the Halifax one. The card worked, and I thought no more of it. My mum got a little bit better, and I went back to Hong Kong. Unfortunately, she passed away about a month later, and I returned to the UK for the funeral, and this time I hired a car. Once again, I had to use the Halifax credit card, blissfully unaware that the direct debit had been cancelled. So, back to March the 6th, I explain everything to my broker. He says it won't be a problem for this application, but that I should try and get the missing month removed from my file as it will affect future lending. All I have to do is to provide proof that I have cleared the balance via my credit card statement and have an explanation ready for the lender should they require one. I breathe a sigh of relief and phone the bank. The guy I speak to at the bank is really nice, probably because when I asked him his name, I guess spelled it back to him, and he said I was the first stranger ever to spell it correctly. He tells me he will word the appeal in such a way as to increase my chances of getting the missing months removed. I will, however, have to wait 8 weeks to get my answer. Job done, I think no more of it until a couple of days later, when I get another email from my broker. I've spoken to the lender, and unfortunately, there are no exceptions. They allowed 2 missed payments in a period of 24 months. However, this makes it 2 in 12 months. I'm afraid you'll have to get it removed from your credit report, and I've put the case on hold until you advise me what to do. Disaster, or expat mortgage disaster, as the title of episode 84 goes. There's a lot more detail to it all than in today's show, and there seems little point in repeating it all word for word when you can go back to listen to the first half of the story there, which is how it happened. But although I triumphantly announced in a subsequent episode a couple of months later that the whole issue had been resolved, I haven't gone into the details, which will hopefully give you some ideas on how to deal with a situation like this, or even better, avoid it happening in the first place. Although Badango has told me it will take 8 weeks to get the result of my appeal, after 6 weeks, I give them a call again to see if my case has been reviewed. I'm glad I do, because they have some good news for me. They've agreed to remove the missing payments from my credit file, which means that our mortgage application for the flats can finally go ahead. It's now mid-April, and they tell me that my credit file will be updated on Saturday, May the 6th, 2023. Things are looking up. Saturday, May the 6th comes and goes, as does Saturday, May the 13th. My credit file remains unchanged. My regular calls to the Halifax turn out to be my most painful memories from 2023. Getting the decision reversed turns out to be the easy part in this whole sorry saga. Actually getting them to follow through on their decision and getting the missing months removed from my credit file turns out to be a nightmare and a real test of my positive mindset. On the 17th of May, I call the Halifax again. Now, I don't mind admitting that one of the things I like the least about being an expat property investor is phoning up banks or utility companies after a long day at the expat office. After nearly 2 hours explaining the reason for my call, being transferred to a different department, being placed in the queue for that department, explaining the whole reason for calling again, before being transferred again, placed on hold again, etc., etc., until finally someone, somewhere, tells me that the problem will be dealt with, and my file will be updated, probably by the next day, but definitely by the day after, i.e. May the 19th. So, on the 19th, which is a Friday, and the day the Halifax have promised to have my credit file updated, I spend another couple of hours going around the Halifax phone system, starting, as usual, with the credit card operation department, trying to get them to agree to writing a letter on headed paper. They say that the automated system won't allow them to do this. They tell me that I'll have to visit my branch. I explain that I'm in Hong Kong and this won't be possible. They advise me to phone the branch, but as it's now nearly 5:30 in the UK, I'll have to wait until the Monday. On the Monday, which is the 22nd, I phone the branch to get them to confirm on headed paper that they've amended my credit report. As usual, I have to go round the houses and explain the story several times. Eventually, I get passed to someone who can actually give me a response rather than passing me on to someone else. But it isn't good.
I do apologise, but it's not something we do.
By this stage, I've confirmed several times that the decision has been made and that they have definitely agreed to remove the missing months from my file. So, I go on the attack. I tell the guy that if this was 1963 instead of 2023, my bank manager would just write the letter, so why can't they do it? Why have we gone backwards?
I do apologise, but it's not something we do.
Why not?
I do apologise, but it's not something we do.
We'll be back with the podcast in a second,
But I just wanted to let you know that we help high net worth individuals who perhaps don't have the time, expertise, or contacts to find deals that stack right now. We can offer fixed rate returns of up to 12%. So instead of watching your savings get swallowed by inflation, why not schedule a free call via the link in the show notes to see how we might work together? Now, back to the pod.
In the end, the guy asked me if I want to make a complaint about being dragged from pillar to post, his words, and I say yes. He then writes it all out and comes back on the line offering me a deal. £50 to close the complaint. He also tells me that the Experian file only gets updated in the third week of each month, so it's now looking like I may have to wait a few more weeks. I have my UK mail redirected to my accountant, but a week later, the promised letter still hasn't arrived, nor the week after that. I spend another couple of hours going round the departments on the phone to the Halifax. Someone very friendly tells me that the matter has been marked on the system as actioned, so she can't understand why the letter has not been sent out. She agrees to try and sort it out, but with the caveat that she's too junior to write the letter herself. She marks the case as urgent, and we agree that if I haven't received the letter within 4 or 5 days, I should call again. On the 13th of June, my broker emails me saying that the credit file has still not been amended and that the lender's deadline for this is the 12th of July. So, I decide to call the Halifax every day from this point onwards. It soon transpires that the problem seems to be getting Experian to update their system. So I start emailing Experian, but I can't check the file itself because I can't create an account with them from Hong Kong. Eventually, my broker steps in like a knight in shining armour. From the UK, he sets up an account with Check My File and passes me the login details. I start logging into this account daily to see if my score changes. And finally, eventually, mercifully, one day, I see the score has gone up from 617 to 681. I ask my broker to check with the lender, and the lender confirms that the missing months have now been removed and the application can go ahead. It's just as well, because there's only a week to spare before the mortgage offer gets withdrawn, and we would have to reapply and pay all over again for a valuation and the legals, not to mention the fact that rates have been increasing with each meeting of the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee. It's a huge relief. Now, as you know, I'm a big fan of journaling. In episode 74, I had a great discussion with Darren McNeil about the benefits and advantages of writing things down. And episodes like this would not be possible if I don't record some of what happens each week. And it's one of the reasons I named the podcast Expat Property Story. If I don't write it all down, I probably won't remember any of it. In my day job, I see firsthand how little of what we hear, experience, or do stays in our long-term memory. So writing it all down really does help to learn things. Keeping a journal also helps with my mindset. As when I read it back, it's amazing how things in the past that felt like such a massive deal at the time have disappeared from the radar, showing me, touch wood, that there's usually a solution to a problem, even if it might not seem like it at the time. So, journaling can help with your mindset, and the truth is that your mindset is everything. We've all seen sports people who at certain times can do no wrong, and everything they touch turns to gold, while at other times they look like pale imitations of their normal selves. I watched a great series on Netflix called Losers, which I'd highly recommend. It's an 8-part documentary series, but don't let the title fool you, because although the episodes are all about sports people experiencing painful defeats, the overall message behind the series is about how they all turn their losses into positive experiences. The fact is that we're all a little bit tainted by seeing the success of others plastered in our face, either on Instagram or on TV, during sports programs, or on those dreadful talent shows. No one begrudges others' success, at least we shouldn't anyway, but the amount of attention given to people's success is disproportionate to the amount of success most of us are likely to encounter. Another series I enjoyed on Netflix was called The Playbook. One of the episodes was about a basketball coach called Doc Rivers. Now I'll be honest, I find basketball one of the most boring, if not the most boring sports going. And I apologise if you're offended, but Doc Rivers is apparently one of the 15 most successful basketball coaches of all time. But on this documentary, he said something that really stuck with me. and it was that he's remembered for winning. And that's what everyone sees. But actually, like most sports people, he loses more than he wins. Whenever there's some kind of competition on TV, the amount of time dedicated to capturing the joy of winning is naturally greater than the amount of camera time given to the misery of the losers. And it's totally understandable. It would be weird and uncomfortable if the focus was more on the losers than the winners. But the point I'm making is that in a Formula One Grand Prix race, for example, there are 16 drivers, but only 3 make it onto the podium. And most of the attention is rightly on the winner. But we barely notice the unlucky 13. And this skews our thinking and has the potential to make us think that everyone's a winner except us, because we rarely see the winners when they're losing. In fact, we rarely focus on the art of losing at all, even though it's perhaps the most important lesson to learn of all, because it's in how we lose that makes us win later. I remember a phrase or saying that stuck in my head from a very young age, and it's that the recipe for success is the capacity to endure failure. And that's what makes winners stand out. Winners lose more than they win, but losing makes them more determined than ever. So what I'm trying to get at is that you'll have more bad days than good days in whatever field you're in, and especially property. We hear lots of people saying that you have to have a positive mindset and strength of character and resilience and willpower and persistence and determination. And it's easy to have all of that when things are going well. But when we have a setback, an obstacle, or when we get bad news, that's when we need to depend on a positive mindset. And that's probably the hardest part. So, back to the story. The money finally lands in our business bank account on the 3rd of July, 2023. Now, I know that I've told some of this story before, but I make no apologies for the repetition because it provides so many valuable lessons. Here are 10.
1.
Tell everyone when you have a problem. There's always a solution out there somewhere. After I told everyone about our expat mortgage disaster, someone from my network told me about a website called CEO.com, which contains the email addresses of all the CEOs of major companies. So I started emailing the CEO of the Halifax, who is a man called Russell Galley. When I announced this in episode 84, friend of the pod Jim got in touch and told me that he used to be a senior exec at Halifax 20 years ago and knew Mr. Galley by name, if not in person. Jim tried a direct approach via LinkedIn in the hope that because of mutual connections from the Halifax, he would accept and then Jim would message him the link to the show. Now, I don't think anything came of this, but the main takeaway here is that when you need help, ask for it, because people love helping others.
2.
Don't fall victim to the heads you win, tails is bad luck philosophy. You are responsible for what happens in your story. Don't feel sorry for yourself. Well, not for long anyway. Accept it, learn from it, and move on.
3.
Don't give up. When times are tough, fall back on your why, your purpose, your passion. Let that motivate you.
4.
Be systematic. Make an Excel file specifically for utility bills to keep on top of anything that could affect your credit rating.
5.
As your portfolio grows, consider getting a virtual office. If you're relying on friends or family or your accountant to open and forward mail to you, you're leaving yourself open to potential disasters. A virtual office will not only help you look more professional, it will also stop important communication from slipping through the net.
6.
Always use a mortgage broker, especially as brokers get most of their fees from the lender, so they're as motivated as you are to getting the deal done.
7.
Keep a log of your calls with banks, utility companies, etc. You never know when something will descend into an epic disaster, the details of which you wish you'd recorded right from the start.
8.
Be polite. My success in getting the missing month removed from the file in the end came down to how the original guy at the Halifax worded my letter of appeal, because I'd had a friendly conversation with him. So, Badango, if you're listening, thank you, sir.
9.
How you deal with setbacks determines your success. The last one standing is the winner, even if they're the first one to fall. Things will definitely go wrong. How you react when you lose will determine how long you have to wait until you win. As Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And finally,
10.
Keep on top of your credit rating. This is a tricky one for lots of reasons. I should definitely remind you at this stage that none of the information in this or any other episode should ever be taken as gospel, and you should always seek professional and legal advice, particularly as my experience may not have been accurately remembered. And even if it is, it could well be out of date by the time you're listening to this. So, anyway, here goes. There are three main credit agencies, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion, and each agency looks in different places. For example, in my case, on Experian and TransUnion, I'm registered as having two active accounts, whereas on Equifax, I have three. So you might be wondering what I mean by an active account. Well, an active account could be a UK bank account with a UK address, a mortgage on a property that you had before you left the UK, or a credit card registered to a UK address. I think that the minimum lenders like to see is two active accounts, and ideally three or more. And they also want evidence of a UK correspondence address, and that evidence not only has to come from two different sources, which could be a credit card statement or a bank statement or a utility bill, but it has to be something that's been physically posted. So downloading a document from the internet won't do, and lenders apparently can spot them all. One way to add an extra active account is by applying for a second credit card. But you may need to be careful about this, because if you apply and get rejected for one reason or another, probably because of your expat status, this rejection could have a negative impact on your credit score. If, on the other hand, your application is successful, it's one more account to keep on top of. As you can see, it's all a bit of a minefield. In our case, we rent out our original London flat, and I have a water bill in my name and a UK bank account going to the same address, but with a Royal Mail post office redirection going to my accountant. Now, it may surprise some of you to know that even a post office redirection will be visible to the credit reference agencies. It's not the end of the world. It's more of an orange flag to lenders than a red one. It may need explaining. And the other thing to remember with post office redirections is that I think there's a limit to the amount of time or number of renewals that you can apply for with the Royal Mail. And finally, obviously, lenders will also want evidence that you live where you say you live. So I have my local bank account registered at my home address here in Hong Kong. So with three agencies to choose from, each with access to different information about you, how do you keep on top of it all? Well, by far the best way, in my opinion, is with a Check My File account. Check My File collates all the information held by all three agencies and even breaks it down according to what each agency has on you. At £15 a month, it really is a comprehensive resource which I'd highly recommend. But there's one problem. When you try and register for an account, it won't let you do it from abroad. Well, it didn't let me anyway, and to be honest, I've been so spooked by my credit rating situation after getting blacklisted last year that I'm reluctant to try it again. But maybe it's possible from other parts of the world. And one final tip is to stay on the electoral register as long as you can, as this will have a positive impact on your credit rating. This became a problem for us a couple of years ago after we'd been out of the UK for more than 15 years. But I've just read on the internet that in January of this year, the government has removed this 15-year limit. And even as I've been preparing this week's episode, I've been asking questions about it on the expat WhatsApp group chat. And Nick from Dubai says he got a Check My File account using his UK VPN. So that sounds like a good plan to me. I told you it was tricky, didn't I? So, we've made it to mid-July 2023 and still no property added to our portfolio since 2022. But we've still got the second half of the year to put that right, right? Join me next week as I tell you what happens next. And if you'd like to carry on the conversation, join us on the WhatsApp group chat by following the link in the show notes. This has definitely been an episode that you should tell others about so that they can avoid the mistakes that I made in 2023. So I'd just love it if you would share the show to spread the word. You've been listening to
Expat Property Stories.